And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I should do it, but just marry this guy then.
If you're right. Yeah, that ain't happening.
How you been, man? You took some time.
I did. I needed to take some time. I was...
You look really good. You look peaceful.
Just got back from Italy.
Yeah.
I spent a week in Rome.
Mm.
It was great. I needed it.
Yeah.
I was pretty burnt out.
Yeah. But even before then, you were...
You know, I went straight from the campaign to working on stuff, and then... I took no time off. I simply took no time off. And last year was a very stressful year. My mother-in-law passed away.
Who had been living
with us. Well, it was fine. I mean, she was elderly and she was very end-stage Alzheimer's for quite a while. So it was very, very challenging for my wife. And she lived with us. So the dynamics of the household changed as a result.
Yeah.
And my wife... The grieving process and everything else. So it was hard, very hard.
And with Alzheimer's, you're grieving beforehand.
No, it's a terrible thing.
And it's like what do you call it? The longest goodbye.
It is. It's dreadful. I wouldn't wish it on people. No, it's a terrible thing. But let me shut my phones off here. It's been an interesting year. It's been just about a year since we sat down.
Yeah.
We talked at some point about some kind of political stuff. But it's been an interesting year in that, you know, we've seen so much change.
Or have we?
Well, clearly we have. I mean, things are certainly different than they were.
Are you surprised?
That's a loaded question. I think every day we're surprised. And if you're not surprised, then there's something wrong with you.
See, I expected. Now, I couldn't, in good conscience, vote Democrat this year for this presidential election.
Congratulations! How many years? 54 years.
There you go. You're kind. I couldn't do it because when I saw Biden do that debate, I'm like, okay, I get you all lie, but holy Christmas Eve, man! Not you. Personally,
No, I get it. It was bad. And
I was
Kamala
like,
was,
you know, even if she was great, I'm like, how did you not? But even if she was, how did you people not tell us this guy had gone bye bye? I can't do it. So I voted, but I voted thinking this is what I was going to get.
Well, you know, you can say one thing about Donald Trump. He's nothing if not consistent.
Incredibly consistent.
And Jesus, I mean, you know, he said I was going to do X, Y, and Z, and he's done, you know, X and Y. You know, he's working on Z. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah, yeah. Nuts. Yeah, I mean...
I wouldn't want to sit down, you know, this may come back to haunt me, but I don't know how comfortable I would be sitting across from him at, like, a table, like, in a social setting. I'm sure he has to own the room. Like, has to take the air and suck it right out of the room.
Did I tell you my story about doing that?
Have you met the guy?
Yeah.
Holy bro.
Yeah. So this was way before he ran for president. You know what the new school is in the city?
Of course.
Okay, yeah. So he was given a talk on, it's a great story. This will tell you everything you need to know. He's given a talk on real estate. And I was friends with, he passed, I was friends with Al Schragis, who's the Al in Doral.
Mm-hmm.
So he's friends with Trump. And he said, listen, after this, a bunch of us are going out to dinner. Come out to dinner. So we go out to dinner, right?
To Spark Steakhouse, and no one had a gun that night?
I don't know if they had a gun. So he So we're out to dinner, and it's like 10 of us. So it wasn't like I wasn't doing one-on-one.
That's still,
but it's still, yeah,
very,
yeah,
very tight.
So he told this story. He goes, he had just filed for a bankruptcy, one or whatever. And he goes, I'm in my office, and my admin calls me and said, Mr. Trump, Vice President of Bank of America, is here to see you. He's like, okay, let him in. Vice President of Bank of America sits down and says, Mr. Trump, you have a problem. And he goes, what's my problem? And they say, you owe Bank of America $700 million.
Not a problem.
And Trump goes, if I owe Bank of America $700 million, Bank of America has a problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's absolutely accurate.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm sure he has to own the room. He has to occupy the space. It's, it's just who he is.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting. I've been kicking around whether I would continue in the path of running for office, even though I feel in many ways like a, you know, canary in a coal mine, especially here in Los Valley. But I was asked to speak at an event for a Republican club up in Greene County. So I said, sure, no problem. So we, I went up, and it was a very hot day. So the event was held inside, but it was so loud that we had like the little speech stumping nonsense outside. And there was a couple, an older couple, sitting outside, like with the sweat pouring off them. They were the only people sitting outside under this patio. So we're on the other end of the patio talking about, you know, this is so-and-so, and he's the county supervisor or town supervisor. So anyway, they get to me and ask me to say a few words. And the older gentleman gets up, like pops up like a cork, and like comes closer and is listening. And, you know, it was one of those, keep the faith, okay, Trump won the election, the country has a sort of a reset, we have the Senate and the Congress, but on the state level, on the local level, you know, we didn't win the congressional seats, we lost those, we have no control at the state level. So anyway, at the end of it, this gentleman comes over, and he's like, and he knows who I am. He's like, what's your name? I'm like, Patrick. You're from Ulster County. I'm like, yeah. And you ran against Michelle Henchy. I'm like, yes. So are you going to run again? I says, you know, I'm thinking about it. I certainly feel that it's there's a need for sanity. And he says, can I ask you a question? And I've been asked this several times, and it's always like the loaded, can I ask you a question?
Mm.
I'm like, sure. What's your position on Donald Trump? Now, whatever my position, it doesn't really matter. I mean, this is already like a closed case.
Right.
And frankly, from the perspective of the New York State Senate or the New York State Assembly, absolutely of no consequence, in my opinion. Okay.
Right.
Your role is to, like, you know, keep the state in check. Okay. I digress. So what's my position on Donald Trump? I'm like, Or did it, you know, did you vote for Donald Trump? I said, do you support the president? I said, of course I support the president, just like I supported Joe Biden when he was president. You support a rapist and a felon? And I'm like, that rapist and felon is the president of the United States of America.
Right.
And yes, I do support him. And he made a statement that I've heard twice. It happened almost the first time I ran back in 19, whatever it was, when I ran for the assembly.
Right.
I was in Rhinebeck at a gas station, and the same exact words came out of this gentleman's mouth this August, came out of this other gentleman's mouth 2.5 years ago. I will do everything in my power to stop you.
Mm.
Now, that is an extremely personal.
Yeah.
That's not like, I will not vote
for you. I'm not voting for you, right?
I will do everything I can to get this other person elected. No, I will do everything in my power to stop you. And I looked at the guy at the gas station 2.5 years ago in a similar vein to looking at this older gentleman. And I'm like, well, I'm going to do everything in my power to get elected. But it's a very personal.
That's
like,
a really hard way to say
no,
that.
It's a very threatening statement. And so the guy at the gas station, like, he immediately got in his car, and I'm like walking to my car, and I'm thinking to myself, what do you have in your power? Are you going to run? Like, are you going to run me over?
Right.
I mean, like, what is it that, you know, and I'm like 2.5 years ago, I was a little more, I don't know, wet behind the ears, but I'm like, you know, I'm fairly inoffensive. I'm just like, you know, local guy trying to like reset the clock here. What is it that you feel so compelled to show this kind of anger? And it's a real problem. I mean, this, you know, I had been thinking about the political landscape we've seen over the past 8-9 months since Trump took office. You know, the continuation of a certain amount of lawfare that has occurred, and the protest du jour, you might say.
Right.
Okay, every weekend there is a town square somewhere that is filled with generally older people, particularly older women, who are embittered at the concept that this guy is the president. So we have a No Kings rally, we got a No This rally, and it has only, like, the volume on that has only increased. And then this, so again, I was in Rome, really thinking about the whole, you know, longitudinal path that our lives are on, as you are walking on smooth cobblestones that were laid 3,000 years ago outside the Colosseum, right? You're like, wow, this is insane. And here we are, we're like mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Okay, like, we are here for but a brief moment. And I got on the airplane coming home, and when I got off the plane and I turned my phone on, Charlie Kirk had been assassinated.
Mm.
And it was a true political assassination, which is one of the most disturbing things you can think of, especially in a society like ours.
Mm.
I mean, this is like the beginning of the First World War, when they assassinated the crown, the Ferdinand.
Ferdinand,
the,
right,
the,
yeah.
The crown prince of
Spain,
Sarajevo,
right?
Or something. Or it happened in Sarajevo. You know, you rarely see a circumstance so drastic. And the concept that this, I mean, I have not watched, I saw for a brief moment the video where the actual bullet hit him. And again, I have an interesting background. I work and have worked as a medical examiner.
Right.
So I've seen a lot. But to see someone literally assassinated in Technicolor, and to have that occur as this guy is like sitting here,
right,
talking to you, you know, having this discourse, and then to have people really applaud and cheer for that kind of behavior, that is very, very deeply disturbing. And I don't know how we come out of that. I don't know how we come out of this crazy skid we're on and stay in one direction.
Cheering for anybody's death, even if it's not political, absolutely, is insanity. And
listen, I didn't cry too much when Saddam Hussein.
Okay, yes, yes.
Okay,
there are a few exceptions.
There are people who deserve, you know, extreme measures.
There are a few exceptions, but overall, if you're cheering for somebody's death, especially somebody that you don't know, especially not an elected official, by the way.
Well, that's it.
Didn't sign on for the risk of, you know, I think anybody that, you know, you run on a national level, you accept that there's going to be a degree.
Level.
Right.
And I mean, it's kind of
gas stations in Rhinebeck are scary.
Never would have thought that in my life.
Yeah. But I think the way back. So I do kind of hold Trump a little bit accountable for the environment. Even if you like the message, the mode of communication is such that there's almost like no move for unity at all.
Well, the temperature is very high.
Yeah, but he can lower it if he wants, and he's not choosing to. He can give on something that doesn't matter to you and make a show. It's very hard to not be in this climate and not draw a direct link to the president.
I don't know if you can draw. I think that he certainly is a catalyst for that level of anger.
Yeah.
And again, I've also seen that on the social media side. People that I've been friends with who are rabidly offended and, you know, won't talk to me at this point. I mean, based on the fact that I ran on the Republican conservative line and therefore I'm absolutely in the Donald Trump camp, whether I'm in it or not.
It doesn't, right. Matter. Doesn't matter.
You're painted with that brush.
Right. But, well, it's funny. I'm, you know, Lynn Versace, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm campaigning for her. She's a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're far from a Republican.
And I'm far from a Republican, but she's also the right. She's a great person.
See, and that's what it takes. You need the right people at the right time, right, in the right place.
And but I've lost a few people.
I believe it. No.
Oddly, yeah, I've lost a few people. And like,
yeah, no, it's scary that people you've known for many years can literally turn on a dime.
Right.
But no, it's also
amazing to me. That presents to me a fundamental ignorance of what the whole process is supposed to be. It's supposed to be two opposing opinions.
Discourse.
Yeah.
Dialogue.
You don't want one party.
Well, unfortunately, we've kind of come to that. And you can blame academia for a lot of that, too.
Yeah.
You know, I went to Boston College, and it never occurred to me that there would not be someone playing devil's advocate.
Right.
On any conversation.
Right.
And then again, I went to law school, where that's the whole objective of law school is,
right,
you may not like the person that you are tasked with prosecuting or defending or what have you. You may not like prosecuting them. You may not like defending them. But today is your day. You got the short straw, and you're going to take this position for this set of facts,
right,
and argue as best you can why this should be the way the outcome should be.
Right.
Whether you like it or agree with it or not. You know, I had a good friend, Jeremiah Flaherty. He was a great defense attorney, and he was lethal in court. And he represented all kinds of dreadful people who did all kinds of heinous things. And he was very, very devout Catholic. But his position was, my role is to make sure that the prosecution does their job better than me.
Right.
Because that is the basis of our defense, our criminal justice system.
Right. And the reason you want that is because every once in a while, somebody's innocent.
Correct.
No. And if you don't have that system where that somebody's innocent, it all...
No, and he slept well at night. You know,
yeah.
I mean, people would get really angry at some of the people who defended, but he gave them his absolute best defense. And that is sort of how our system works. And
right.
To not allow dialogue, I mean, again... This is really pointed. The fact that this guy was sitting like on a chair like this with a group of people who he's willing to debate with.
Yeah.
And it's the follow-up to the latest set of shootings where this transgender individual went into that Catholic school,
mm-hmm,
about 3 weeks ago. There's almost a direct correlation that the temperature really rose in this assassination from what they're sort of devolving or presenting. Charlie Kirk took a position based on that homicide of those children in the Catholic school, that the person who committed that offense was indeed in the transgender world. The mother of that young person had signed the papers that turned, you know, John into Josephine or whatever the hell it was. The fact that I believe she had said to her son, you will regret going down this road. And fast forward 2 years later, did indeed regret going down that road, had taken hormone therapies, had done things, was involved with another trans person, and really blamed the mother for, you know, almost like an I told you so kind of thing, and then decides that they're going to, you know, commit this atrocity,
mm-hmm,
at the school where the mother had worked. The mother worked at that school for a number of years. So Kirk took a position that the transgender movement and the real hard movement towards the use of violence amongst that group of individuals was inconsistent with just your regular run-of-the-mill, I have identity issues, I don't know if I'm gender fluid or what have you, and that this was a movement beyond that. And, you know, there have been a number of circumstances of late where people who are either in the transgender world or who support it are willing to take a much harder stance and go to, you know, the use of violence to affect their argument. And so that may have been the tipping point for this young man in taking out Charlie Kirk the other day.
We were in trouble when that, I can't remember his name, the CEO of the health insurance.
Oh, the Mangione thing.
We were in trouble then.
Correct.
Because people celebrated that and nobody, like now there's like at least you and me pushing back a little bit going, wait a second, you can't, you may disagree with the guy, but you can't. There was not a lot of sympathy.
No, there was not. I mean,
at all. That's crazy.
Going back to my defense attorney friend, Jeremiah Flaherty, may he rest in peace. No, this gentleman who was executed on the streets of New York had a job to do. That's what the board of directors, that's what the stockholders wanted him to do, was this is your role in this corporation. Now, granted, it's a healthcare corporation and, you know, there are human aspects that people get very angry about. But what was curious about that in particular was this young man, Mangione, came from an extremely wealthy family.
Yeah.
Okay. Like NYU Langone is named for the Langone family, the guy who started Home Depot. The Mangionis apparently have their names on like hospital wings in Baltimore. So he was not impacted personally by the decisions.
Money doesn't help you when you're mentally ill.
No.
I wish it did, but it does not.
But he in particular, as the assassin, was in no way impacted by the role of this CEO or this healthcare corporation. So it was really terrifying because he essentially targeted this individual, not because of a personal issue, but because of an academic or an intellectual.
But that's kind of my
disagreement.
Case in, That's kind of my case in point about the whole trans thing, though, is this guy had no skin in the game, but he's crazy and he shoots a CEO. Dude, I'm not 100% sure this week, 4 out of 7 shooters are trans. Next week, 4 out of 7 shooters will be an acoustic guitar player. Mental, mental health is not, but the idea that I saw that Mangione thing, you know, as like a real dangerous entree because there was no pushback at all, almost. And then, are we going to socialize medicine then? Do we not have to? Because if I say back to you what you said, it's legit to have a job where your governance is to deny people healthcare. Mm-hmm. That's what you want. How can that be a functioning system?
Because at the end of the day, you are obligated to your shareholders.
Right. So how? But that obligation can't exist in a serviceable healthcare system. It should be do all we can every time.
Okay, I would say you are correct in that respect. However, when COVID hit, it was American pharmaceutical companies that were able to jump in, get things rolling in a way that could not have been done.
Oh, totally.
Okay, and that is based on that old, you know, evil word, capitalism.
Yeah, totally.
So there's a balance, and we are not in that balance point.
I would submit, though, that American pharmaceutical companies could have earned half of what they did.
Oh, of course.
And still been
no,
as...
There's no question about it.
And like, code was a market opportunity. So, you know, so even in a universal healthcare system, if a COVID happens again, if COVID happens again, you know, that'll be a market opportunity. Somebody will get paid. They might not get paid at that level, but I'm with you on that whole thing that when a Mangione thing happened and nobody said, hey, wait a second, you shouldn't shoot CEOs. I'm like, we are. And then, the other thing about the Chris assassination that scared me was, people who cheer for that are missing the fundamental idea of what a spectrum is. This, and everything is on a spectrum. You have never met anybody, nor have I, in my life, who's wrong about everything. That saying, stop clock, right twice a day. Like, even though I'm not a Democrat, you're right about a lot of stuff.
Well,
everybody's right about a lot of stuff. So to be that positively diametrically opposed to somebody.
When I spoke at an event one time in debate with my previous candidate, Michelle Henchy, I said, there's more that we agree on than we disagree on. And someone took issue with that. They said, you know, no, you need to point out the differences. And I said, yes, we certainly do point out the differences. But at the end of the day, we're both from here. We're both born and raised here. We both want what's best
right.
for the community
right.
that we are living in. We simply have differences in how we get there or
right.
how we've presented thus far. But no, people that agree to disagree, or there's more that makes us similar than makes us different, those perspectives are waning. They are
yeah.
troublingly fewer and less frequent, and people have less ability to take a deep breath and say, okay, you know, I don't. And here's the funny thing. So I don't watch Joy Behar. I don't watch The View. I've never watched it, I don't think, in my entire life.
I watched it for 20 seconds and went insane. I can't take that many women yelling at the same time.
Well, that's a whole other conversation. But I have never in my life listened to Charlie Kirk, ever.
Mm.
Okay, I knew of him, just like, you know, I know of, you know, Sean Hannity
right.
or Jay Leno, but I don't have any skin in that game. It's not he's not someone I looked at as, you know, the prophet of conservatism.
Right.
I just, you know, I think a lot of us just go about our lives and absorb peripherally what's there, and we come to our own conclusions. There are those who need that level of leadership on either side
right.
of the spectrum. Okay. There are people out there who need Joy Behar screaming in their ear, or Whoopi Goldberg. There are people who need Charlie Kirk screaming in their ear on the other side. But I've never felt that way. And yet I empathize sincerely with the fact that this young man was executed for simply offering a differing opinion.
Right.
And, you know, the and one thing...
The other... Sorry,
no,
but the other remarkable thing, because I have listened to him. One of the few who will have a discussion like this. Like, he'll sit with somebody with... Like, I have very much opposing views to a lot of what he said. I've heard him talk to people who think like I do. Very civil. Very open. He wasn't even militant about it.
No. He was just conversational from what
yeah. Yeah. It was craziness.
And again, there was, I think, the lack of, like, Bill Maher, he's always like, you know, twisting the corkscrew in people all
right.
the time. And he does a great job, in my opinion, of playing devil's advocate, even with his own, like, acolytes. But Maher is more acerbic, you might say.
Yeah.
Than this
oh, yeah.
ever was.
Oh, totally.
You know, but no, I mean, having run for office, having put out position papers, having had interviews with various reporters and done this type of podcast and been on the radio, I recognize the need for dialogue, and I recognize the need for balanced discourse.
Mm-hmm.
And I have really given a lot of thought to, you know, that trajectory for myself, but it was very curious to get off an airplane and have been in radio silence for 10 hours
yeah.
and see this and be like, wow. And so there, unfortunately or fortunately, there is a real need for continued dialogue. And I, you know, our conversations have always been cordial. And,
yeah.
You know, we see more. It's probably based on our age, our life experiences, which are entirely different, but we have children the same age. We have spouses. We live in this beautiful area.
And we knew a different time.
And certainly
we knew a different time.
Yeah.
And that's part of what I worry about now is like you look at our kids' generation.
Absolutely.
And you're like, we've seen cycles.
Correct.
With everything, with AI and everything else, I don't think we can bet on a cycle anymore.
I don't know about that. So I will say this. So having just gotten back from Europe, I hadn't had a vacation. I literally have not had a true vacation, like where I went somewhere and had no business transactions going on.
Right.
In at least probably 25 years.
Wow, that's a long haul.
It's just how I roll. It's yeah. how I'm wired. I will travel places and be
take a meeting
other transactions. Right. Yeah. So what I did find in Europe, and I want my son, who's 18, your daughter should certainly do it as well. The European youth, like in Rome, are much more, it's much more similar to me or more comfortable to me to what we observed growing up in the 80s and 90s. Okay. The girls go out the door with a full face of makeup and nails and hair and dressed like appropriately. You don't see slides and Crocs. You don't see, you know, flannel pajamas. You don't see any of that stuff.
Right.
In fact, whatever your position is on LGBTQ stuff, in my entire trip to Rome and Florence, I saw one flag in one place for the Rainbow Coalition mm-hmm. of LGBT. Yeah, there were certainly people who were in that lifestyle, but it was very like on the down low. Okay. They might be holding hands. They might be, you know, like boys being, you know, boys and boys and girls, but it was not to the level of literally flying my flag. Like I'm loud and proud and you've got to endure this because I insist on it. So,
but you're in the Catholic capital of the world. How could you survive flying a flag in the Catholic capital of the world?
You know, it's a big city. It's
not that big. It's
big enough. But to see young people, okay, if you're not in a professional position, like if you're not a doctor, lawyer, academic, you wear a uniform over there. Okay. Mm. Almost everybody is either in business attire or in uniforms. And what was staggering to me, okay, I can't buy a shirt and tie anywhere between Albany and New York City. For the most part, unless I go into a men's warehouse and pay an exorbitant amount of money for like a polyester blend.
Okay. Which you shouldn't do even if it was cheap.
You can't throw a stone in Rome without hitting a haberdashery, like an actual men's clothing store.
That's encouraging.
It was amazing.
That's encouraging.
Again, as most of my son's friends like walk around like they just got out of bed, boys and girls, you're like, wow. You may want to like open your eyes to what's out in the real world. And,
right.
In fact, my niece is in Lucerne in Switzerland right now. She is in a master's program in international studies, and they insist that you show up in business attire to school, to classes. You are not allowed. You show up in like a pair of jeans or you know, khaki pants, you're getting thrown out. It's amazing.
I'll tell you why that's important. My opinion, why that's important. Why I completely agree with that.
Extremely important.
It teaches you, like, my daughter, same thing. I think she was in pajamas her entire high school career, right? And slippers, like literally slippers.
They don't know how to tie shoes.
Yeah. What that messaging is nothing's more important than anything else.
Correct.
It's getting out of bed and going to bed and going to school is all the same thing.
On a continuum.
Yeah, yeah. All the same thing. Nothing's more important than anything else. That's why comportment is so important, because it shows a priority. It shows I'm going to take social studies more serious than I'm going to take frozen yogurt.
Mm-hmm.
But they dress the same for both.
No, it was very
two old white guys saying into a microphone.
It was very interesting to go to Rome and see just how people present themselves. Mm-hmm. And you can be bringing the trash out to the curb or going to your job. You're still in more of a professional mode.
Right. You're self-comportment. And there's a pride.
We've lost that.
Yeah. We kind of lost it in the 60s too, but then we had like that whole like Nixon LSD thing and we got it back. But I don't know how you get it back this time because the youth had, in the past, when you're in my past, youth had a consequence. It was adulthood. And in adulthood, you had to get a job, a career, blah, blah. So there was a consequence and you realized, okay, I have to change. I don't know, like, I'm not 100% sure in 10, I bet we're at 70% unemployment in 10 years and that school ends at eighth grade.
Well, that sounds terrifying. However, with Zohran Mamdani likely to become the next mayor of New York City, I think you might be right.
Especially
in New York.
Shortening up the side. Yeah.
The post-COVID world has really had long-standing consequences, and we haven't even seen the rollout of that yet.
Right.
I can recall during the height of COVID seeing lots of people out and about. I was down on the waterfront in Kingston. There's a promenade. You'd see all kinds of people. And they were all wearing masks. And I hardly ever wore a mask. Because if you're outdoors, you need to social distance. But you didn't necessarily need to wear a mask. But so many people wore masks.
Until you saw the video of the guy vaping through a mask and realized that...
My point, what I observed with young children, like infants, is they would fixate on my face in this world of people who were faceless. And when I saw hundreds and hundreds of young babies in that time frame.
Oh, that's so developmentally impactful.
Probably, we haven't seen the rollout of what that's going to do.
Right.
It's terrifying. It really is. But post-COVID, again, you can't find an all-night diner anywhere.
Right.
Even in New York. I mean, the city that never sleeps, you know, at 11 p.m., they're shutting the kitchen down. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
The things we took for granted pre-COVID.
Yeah.
It's like 9/11. I was talking to somebody about the 9/11 ceremony the other day, and pre-9/11, the way we interacted, the way we traveled, the way we sort of comported ourselves in the law enforcement world versus post-9/11. When everything ratcheted down and everybody became a suspect, are they going to try and bomb my plane? You know,
right.
It's like a similar thing, only it was much more vast and it was much more time consuming.
Mm.
COVID has deep ramifications and our kids are the victims of it. Okay. There's no question. My youngest is 12. He's in the seventh grade. He probably reads and does arithmetic at the fifth grade level, in my opinion.
Right.
Okay. There was just a complete breakdown of the educational system. And again, that comes directly from our reliance and our political reliance on unions. In states with strong teachers' unions, you had lockdowns forever. New York was one of the worst.
Mm.
And because the unions got paid to sit home. And that is a true failure of what the unions were designed to do. You know, when the waste shirt factory burned to the ground in like 1905.
Until you have a crazy parent in your classroom, then you need your union.
Well, that's true, too. No. But again, they serve a purpose. But
right.
But when the purpose becomes how much can we suck out of the taxpayers? How much can we shut down charter schools? How yes. much can we eliminate any kind of competition?
Right.
Then we failed.
Yep. Agreed.
You know, I've been a fire. Going to change shifts. Shift gears here. I've been a volunteer firefighter for my adult life since I turned 18. When I took what they called essentials of firefighting at the ripe old age of 18, it was two nights a week, one weekend, I think a month, we went and we trained. I was trained at the Red Hook Firehouse. And then you went to the smokehouse down at the Dutchess County Bureau of Fire and you did your practicals and you got signed off. And then I did other training. Today, we have a crisis in fire service. We have a crisis in EMS because professional firefighters across the state of New York pay lobbyists to encourage our elected officials to lobby on behalf of continuing regulation. And we've got plenty of it in the state of New York. And as a result, we are seeing the training requirements for volunteer firefighters and EMS at the same level as paid professionals. So it's created a situation where we simply don't have the volunteers. I mean, most of the guys in my fire company are older than I am.
But don't you, I would think you would want that though, because I would think you would want, for the protection of a volunteer firefighter, I would want you walking into a burning building knowing everything you could possibly know, same as a professional. Okay. I wouldn't want you walking in with dropping out of high school. I want you to have the diploma.
I understand that position. However, the training requirements are so inconsistent with a person who has a normal job. Whose kid is going to Little League, that we are simply losing out on volunteers. And the reality is this. It is almost unheard of for volunteer firefighters. I mean, with rare exceptions, you don't see volunteer firefighters burning to death in fires. Now, it has happened when you get, like, there was a nursing home fire in Orange County when you have very complicated fire scenes. But most volunteers who die in the quote-unquote line of duty probably have a heart attack either on their way or on their way home from a call. And the whole objective is to provide a safe resource for your community. That has been eclipsed. It's the same thing as a teacher.
That's probably true for volunteerism across the board.
Correct.
And that I've always thought that you should not get a high school diploma until you can post 150 hours of volunteer work somewhere.
Oh, that's an interesting concept.
Yeah. To ingrain the idea.
You know, I mean, that's an interesting concept. We don't have a compulsory military, but you see that overseas,
right,
where that is basically your volunteer service.
Right. But here...
Yeah, we don't have any of that.
You should be forced to take care of an old person. You should be post 150 hours. That's... Now, I know you've been in the deep end of the pool, and maybe you because volunteerism has its own set of really remarkable rewards.
There's it certainly does.
Community, there's the sense of self-esteem, all kinds of competence raises, there's all kinds of things. But if you never, you won't get that unless you volunteer. And, you know.
Well, and we've really walked away. So, you know, my boys have been involved and my daughters have been involved in Scouts, Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts. And there is a major component to that.
Yeah.
Within those organizations. But again, that was waning. The number of young people involved in those programs has been waning. And post-COVID, it's even worse. I think within the local area, four or five Boy Scout troops closed. You're not getting them back. That's the other problem.
I got my daughter in Girl Scouts. And she did the brownie, and she was, I forget what the award is. It's called like a sword. It's like an Eagle Scout, but for Girl Scouts. And she was a candidate for it. And then, like, but there was only like two girls in our high school that had gone in scouting that long. And she finally dropped out of it because she's like, nobody's doing this. I'm alone.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
it's sad.
No, it's a problem. No, volunteerism in general has really taken a back seat
right.
to, you know, I'm all I think about.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, then you get back to the conversations about how you wind up on September 16th awaiting a funeral for a guy who basically wasn't harming anybody.
Right.
I mean, we have a society that has sort of turned its back on civility.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, not to go Trumpy on you, but there's an example of turning your back on civility. There's a nickname for everybody.
Yeah.
There's a, you know, although I'm going to give him a big prop. He released a tweet the other day and I was astounded by it. He was talking about COVID vaccines.
Okay.
And he wrote, I'm paraphrasing, but not by much. He wrote, when we released the COVID vaccine, we got a lot of credit. People thought it was remarkable and saved a lot of lives. And then he wrote, I hope that's true. But if it's not, I want to know right now, and I want to know why. And I'm like, wow, that is at least a step towards some sort of like admission. I'm not everything I do is gold and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting, I didn't see that particular quotation, but no.
And that's the right stance. It's like, hey, if this isn't what was supposed to be, somebody tell me right now.
Well, in the initial rollout, you know, we were at the forefront of figuring out what, you know, what the gene sequence was and getting ahead of this thing.
Right.
But no, as time went on, the fact that they, you can't sue any of these pharmaceutical companies.
Insanity.
They have, you know, insulated the whole industry from That's any insanity. Kind of liability. Yeah, it's interesting. And again, then when you look at, you know, go back to the gain of function that the National Institute of Health was encouraging and bankrolled.
I was about to say I'm paying for getting encouraging.
A friend of mine actually brought this up. He's like, Pat, you know, it wouldn't surprise me, okay, the guy who cleans like the cages in the Wuhan Institute, okay, similar to cleaning the cages, there's a rat farm in Ulster County, like off of 209. It's some kind of a laboratory.
Oh, okay.
And they test various things on these like mice. Somebody has to clean those cages. Okay.
Right.
And I'm thinking they're not paid a lot of money.
Some poor intern is cleaning those cages.
And I'm thinking in Wuhan, they're certainly not paid a lot of money.
Right.
So he said, you know, this thing came out of Wuhan and it wouldn't have surprised me if like, somebody who's getting no money is like when they're tasked with, okay, we've tested this monkey and we've put it through its paces and now we're going to, you know, exterminate this monkey. Okay, like we're gonna euthanize it and put it in like a crematorium.
Right.
What is the likelihood that, you know, somebody took that monkey
yep.
to like the local food market
right.
and said, I mean,
yeah,
they eat that
yep.
stuff over there and, yeah. and, you know, like sold it.
Yeah.
Okay. I can tell you for a fact when I was working in Queens in the Queens County District Attorney's Office, one day we locked up this guy or the cops locked up this guy and we wrote the complaint out. He was capturing pigeons. He was just putting big nets out and bundling up pigeons and throwing them in the back of a van. The two cops were like on their meal break in like some park, like in Elmhurst. And they see this old van pull up and this guy gets out and he puts this big net down and he throws some bread down and a bunch of pigeons get on the net and he bundles them up. They stop him. And he was charged under the humane laws, the ag and markets laws of the state of New York, which like no one actually used. You know, that's why they brought it to us.
The like, one guy charged, yeah.
What do we do with this? But he was selling pigeons to the Chinese restaurants on the Lower East Side.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so what is the likelihood that
right.
somebody who's like
Stop it
working
yet.
In the Wuhan lab
for 7 cents
has
a day?
A couple, you know, like your job is to throw them in the, in like, the vat of yeah. cyanide or whatever.
Yep, yep.
And instead, you just walk them down to, you know, the market. And
fuck
you
yeah. And
bucks.
He gets 10 bucks for it. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do you know?
And you get a week's pay for that. Yeah.
And somebody ate some meat from one of these animals that was being tested, and then they got sick, and they got sick, and then, you know, I mean, that makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Yeah. You and it begs a question, like, I wanted to ask you this. Does the truth matter anymore? Like, it begs, like, so many people are so effective on both sides, and COVID's a great example of that. On both sides, so many people are so effective working in 20% truth space.
You know, I think it does matter. It's just that a lot of people have lost their moral compass.
Morally, it matters, but impactfully, it does. Like, it used to matter, right? It used to matter. Like, you used to call a politician a liar and they wouldn't get elected.
No.
Now you call them a liar and they're like, well, yeah, of course.
No, I think you're correct. It's all about the spin.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it become more extreme.
Right.
And no one calls it out.
Right.
No one calls it out.
No, but what's remarkable about that is you're in a marriage. Like, if you were 20% honest with your wife, it would last a month and then spin out into oblivion, right?
I've had a couple of girlfriends like that.
I may have shared them with you because I had some too.
Our relationships are built on communication.
And so is a community. And so is a community. And so is a country. And if you're at 20, and I'm saying 20% truth, being generous.
No, it seems as though we've really.
I don't think I think if you know, you said before, I don't know how you climb back from that. I think somebody, perhaps Pat Sheehan, should start selling the importance of the truth. Forget right and wrong. Let's just go with what's true. And once we all can get around the fact that we're tired of being lied to, then we'll go figure out the rest. But we're way out over our... John Burton is way out over his skis saying he's right on a transgender... Let's go with what's true first and then form an opinion.
You know, you speak truth, man. That's a dangerous thing to do. You're probably less familiar with it because you're not up in Kingston that much anymore. But... the state of New York has been pushing the Climate Act, CLCPA, the Climate Leadership Community Protection Act, which was passed in 2019. And it was passed for a lot of bad reasons, okay? Because Andrew Cuomo wanted to be president, because he wanted...
Now he can't be mayor.
He wanted to get in front of the hard left progressives and the Green New Deal. There's tons of money to be made in this world.
Yep.
Okay. My old high school in Kingston, New York, which was John A. Coleman Catholic High School, is owned by an organization that is trying to sell it to another organization that wants to build out a battery storage facility, a lithium ion battery storage facility, because right next to that property is a transformer yard, so they can easily link the battery power to the grid.
Okay.
However, this is where the lawyer in me comes out. This is like the conversations I have with my kids. Like, you know, you did great in math.
However.
Okay. However, this particular piece of property is in very close proximity to two rather large apartment complexes. One is, I think, condos. The other is rentals. It's a fairly residential area. The local fire department in the town of Hurley certainly doesn't have the capacity to provide the fire protection for this thing. And the city of Kingston's next door, which has more capacity, but again, it's a major undertaking. And it also abuts the New York State Thruway. So here's the thing. These things catch fire and they don't go out.
Right.
Okay. Now, they're going to be contained in 40-foot sealant containers. Okay. Each one, and it'll be 40 feet from each one. So they'll be far enough away that if one self-immolates, it won't burn the others. However, it will spew
God knows what. Yeah.
Parts per billion of toxic stuff into the air, and no one is looking for that.
That's too funny.
And
I mean, it's not funny, but.
So the local, again, everybody up in the area is Democrat. Okay. The town supervisor in Hurley, the city mayor in Kingston, all of your elected officials, other than in the town of Ulster, which is a small piece of this, are all heavily Democrat. The guy in Hurley called upon his Democratic colleagues at the Senate and the Assembly, i.e. Sarah Hanna, Shrestha, and Michelle Henchy, to come out in opposition to this project. And the county executive, who's also a Democrat. Well, they can't. Okay, the county executive currently voted for the Climate Act.
It's a problem.
They all are way in the trench of, we need public power. They want to shut down Central Hudson.
Mm.
Our senator and our assembly member are the sponsors at the Assembly and the Senate to take over, publicly take over Central Hudson, which will cost countless hundreds of millions of dollars.
Right.
Okay. But they cannot come out opposed to this project. And so the answer is, it's perfectly fine. The technology is there. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Trust us. We're with the government. And it's like, are you for shitting me?
Yeah.
This is where it goes off the rails. And they can't be honest, because if they're honest, they'll tell you that this particular battery storage facility will have zero benefit to the local community. This is so that if there's a brownout in New York City, they can put this thing online. This has nothing to do. We get all of the risk, all of the downside.
Right.
All of the property value impact.
Right.
All of the
and none of the actual electricity
required. And we get zero in the way of infrastructure capacity in our own community. And trust us, we're with the government. Okay, the last lithium ion battery storage unit that went on fire was at the Goshen High School, where they put in a battery field for all of those electric buses that Goshen was going to buy. Guess what? One of them burnt for like a week and a half. The fire department had to sit there spraying down the other containers. So you've got all these resources to basically keep the thing from self-immolating.
Right.
And yeah, how'd that electric school bus thing work out? It hasn't.
Right.
Okay. And it's not going to.
Right.
So, you know, but this is a perfect example of where, yeah, you're absolutely correct. If I lie to you enough, I guess you won't take issue with me.
Right.
I've
come to expect that that's just what you're going to do.
You've been drinking my Kool-Aid for however long.
Right, right.
But this is how this goes.
I'm going to make you crazy. My daughter just buzzed my bracelet while you were talking.
Sure she did. No. Whatever makes you happy.
It's not a good situation, Pat.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
It's not a good. I do think though that with AI, there's not much need past eighth grade anymore. And to your thing about universities, I don't think the influence of universities, regardless of what side you're on, 10 years from now, bon voyage. You're not going to need it. AI does some. Here's my rationale. You don't need to do math anymore. Right? Nobody needs to do math anymore. So you get much past eighth grade math and understand what the problem is that you're trying to solve. You don't need to actually be able to solve the problem. You don't need to write anymore unless you're an artist, in which case, you know, even then you're in a lot
of AI will write for you.
Yeah. You don't need to remember anything anymore. There's no point in learning Columbus Sail in 1492. I don't need to know that anymore because I can just get the information. So I think education stops at the level where you can read and understand what ChatGPT is saying to you. Past that
sounds terrifying.
But past that, there's not that much more. There's not that much need for it. And public school is such a tax burden. It used to be a benefit, but it's gonna flip and become a burden. I bet you people do. Eighth grade, can you read ChatGPT? Do you know what a square root is? You don't have to be able to solve it. Do you know what one is? And
that, that's a terrifying concept. I hope you're absolutely wrong. It also does not take into account the technical need for many positions outside of doing something on a laptop or a computer. Okay. We have trucks and cars and
which you're not going to need drivers for.
But you need people to fix them. You need people
to wire
these houses.
You don't. You've got a robot to do that. You see that? There's a YouTube. I'll send it to you. There's a YouTube of that Chinese factory that runs 24 hours manufacturing. No people. Not a single person. The bat robots charge themselves. You don't need that anymore.
Well, if we get to that point, then we'll all be consumed by our robots.
A and B will be on universal basic income because you'll have to be. And C,
no, until the machines take over and they just kill us all.
But the machines, that's what's it called? Transmogrificate? No, that's when Jesus began. You're giving the robots an agenda. They don't have an agenda. They just do what you tell them to do. The robot doesn't care. If a robot takes your job, it doesn't care about you. It doesn't want to kill you. It's just got your job.
No, I understand that. But if you get to the point where the robot basically determines that you're more of a liability than you.
But why would you be a liability? You're not a threat to it. I know people worry about that, but I'm like, well, but if I'm not a threat to it. So why?
So how do you make income to give people that basic universal income?
You go to some cryptocurrency where it's all bullshit, and you just say, Pat, you have 30,000.
You have to live on it, though.
You have 30,000 Burton coins. John, you have 30,000 Sheehan coins. If you want to make more, you can go try. Maybe go do something where somebody will pay you some of their Sheehan coins. But that's to the point of bringing it full circle. That's the point of, you know, like understanding why people are don't engage in civil discourse and why people don't, because the future is going to be so different that there's almost no purpose in it. It almost doesn't matter anymore that Pat and John can sit down and disagree on stuff for an hour and a half and have the best time doing it. Because in 5 years, no human being is going to be looking at our X-ray. So there's no more skin in. AI will be governance. AI will definitely be governance. You tell AI, listen, I figure out the best way for everybody to have a level playing field. AI will be governance.
I hope you are absolutely incorrect.
I hope I am too, but I'm not.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
I don't know.
On the other hand, it'll make us better at relationships, interpersonal relationships, I guess.
How? No one will go outside of their door.
Well, no, you can. Like, I'm not bogged down with a 12-hour-a-day job. Now I can go have coffee with Pat.
They won't do that. They'll stay in their bubble, and they'll be on their computer.
And you know what proves you right about that? COVID. When COVID ended, there was a percentage of people that wanted to get out the door immediately. There was a percentage of people that just
didn't want to leave.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you see it now. I mean, you've got all of these DoorDash.
Yeah.
You've got the grocery store deliveries. You don't need to leave your house if you have a bank account.
Right.
With an income source and you have an internet connection.
So here's a philosophical question then, because people always say, well, you know, we're community, we're herd animals, we blah, blah. And I'm like, are we, or were we because we had to be? I left the house because I had to. Now that I have a choice, maybe I can do what I always prefer to do, which is not go anywhere. And maybe that's not bad. Like, maybe we just impose on ourselves this whole thing of, like, we need each other, but a lot of people don't want to need each other.
That is true. That is true. And you see that in your communities. But
on the other hand, you lose something so...
You lose that fabric.
Yeah, yeah.
And
then you get to the meaning of life, and then you're like, okay, well, yeah, do you have to leave the house? No. Is your life going to be more enriched if you do? Yes.
Well, I don't know.
Are you running again?
As it stands, I am likely going to.
Ah, good. Okay, good.
I want to see what happens over the next few months. I certainly hope we can eliminate the Democratic stranglehold on the state. I'd like to see Hochul out of office. I think the fact that she endorsed Zohran Mamdani in the city of New York mayor's race speaks to how terrified she is of being primaried. She needs those voters in the primary.
Right.
But how that translates statewide, again, you know, New York, your city centers do control the state if they come out and vote. Will they come out and vote? It's going to be a congressional year. It's going to be the midterms. I personally think Mamdani will keep his extreme agenda on ICE from the day he's elected, which I think is a given at this point, until the day after the midterm elections in 26.
Mm.
They cannot afford to have him, you know, tearing down the institutions that made New York City, New York City. But
do you think he can, though, or do you think he's just full of shit? Because, like, I hear,
he's totally full of shit.
But, I hear we're going to tax.
Yeah, his parents are multimillionaires in their home country.
Right.
You know, this is a guy who's grown up in privilege his whole life. But that's who you mostly see. I mean, they profiled most of the people in his orbit, in his campaign. They're all 20 to 30 something Ivy League dipshits who have never held a real job.
Right.
But they're going to tell you and I how to live our lives.
But do you think you can get legislation through in New York City that's going to move tax bracket on the wealthy far enough to make a difference? I don't think you can.
So here's where you are wrong. They take the city of New York.
Right.
Zohran, he's warm and fuzzy and he smiles a lot. He becomes the mayor of New York City.
Right.
The DSA then go to every single Democrat assembly member and senator and make this ultimatum. You get behind giving $10 billion from the state coffers to Zohran so he can build our utopian society back down in New York City, or we are going to challenge you at a primary.
Mm.
And we have the resources and the manpower, not just the money. We have the manpower to primary you. So your primaries are based on the Democrat roll showing up on primary day, which is in like May. Okay. It's not even in September anymore. It's sometime like around Memorial Day. They will challenge every person who doesn't give a blood oath to providing him with the money he needs to take out the budget that he wants. So that's where it's going to hit the road.
And looks
exclusively at the donations coming into his campaign and to the PACs that support him. He is getting huge amounts of financial investment from people who have never set foot in New York City.
Yep.
Or are not even from the East Coast.
And because they want finance to move to wherever they are.
Now, I don't know what it is, but you have you have people in Silicon Valley, like giving him millions of dollars, $250,000,
because they're hoping Wall Street goes west.
I don't know if it's that.
I think it is. I think it's like fine. You want to drive out the biggest industry in your city? We'll take it. You get elected.
No, I think it's a utopian philosophy. I really believe that there is a. You know,
again, I think it's funny.
Margaret Thatcher said it best, you know, socialism's great until you run out of other people's money.
Right.
So, no, I believe that will be...
Because that premise is insane. To sit there and say, okay, this entire city's built on primarily one industry.
Capitalism.
Yeah. And finance. Like, finance.
It is the center of
the financial
world.
So I'm going to drive that out.
Mm-hmm.
I am positive that the people who are giving him money that aren't in New York are like, yeah, drive it out. Bring it right here.
No,
I would love to build BlackRock's next big house. Come on.
I think it's more philosophical than that. I do.
Yeah?
And again, just think of the juxtaposition. In 2001, 9/11, 2001, the world was turned on its ear when those towers came down, when the Pentagon was hit, when the Shanksville thing happened. 24 years later, we are on the cusp of electing a Marxist socialist to be the leader of the largest financial center of capitalism in the world.
Because the majority of the country wants him there so that they can get the fund.
Yeah. I disagree.
Yeah,
I disagree.
Man, It's always the money. I think follow the money, man.
I think that a lot of people just drink the Kool-Aid. And they feel there is a utopian society out there.
And in fairness, if our kids, without our help, decided they wanted to live in Manhattan, can't do it. So
I don't know. I lived in Queens, and I lived in in the city for.
I lived in the city too for 3 years, but you could then.
Well, you can again. You'll have free housing and a free grocery store, and
because there's no job,
free buses.
Because AI took it all anyway.
Listen, we have the model is here. It's in Kingston, New York. Okay, we have free buses in Ulster County, courtesy of the Democrat Socialists of America. Now, there's nothing free.
Right.
You don't get charged to get on that bus, but the ridership dictates the federal and state reimbursement rate.
Mm.
So let's say they had 50,000 riders. Now that it's free, they've got 300,000 riders.
Right.
They were getting 70 cents a ride based on 50,000 riders when they charged. Now they're getting 70 cents a ride based on 300,000 riders. So they just are taking more from the feds and from the state.
Right.
And it's a free bus. Now, the downside to that is the buses now have monitors on them, whatever they call them, violence interrupters. They've had to hire full-time
people?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Security, because so many people are on these buses and they're all mentally ill. They're violent. They're just riding around because they got nowhere else to go.
Right.
So you have, you've increased the ridership. You've brought in a windfall of federal and state money, but at the end of the day, it's still coming out of our pockets.
Right.
And that is the same model that Mem Dani will use. I mean, the city of New York, the MTA lost $1 billion in toll evasion from fare beaters, from people jumping turnstiles or getting on buses and not paying.
Wow.
$1 billion. So what's the answer? Let's make it all free and count all those people and get the federal reimbursement.
Right.
And the state reimbursement. And frankly, based on that formula, Mem Dani's probably correct. We'll have a shit pile more people riding those buses. We don't have to worry about the drivers, you know, collecting the fares.
Right.
We're going to get all of these bodies. It's a body count. It's like Vietnam.
Right.
We want a body count. Okay.
Right.
We've got a body count, and now we're getting all of this federal and state reimbursement. And look at that. We've solved the MTA's crisis. But have we?
Right.
Because again, it all works until everybody gets the hell out of here.
Right.
You know, and the socialist model in other countries is basically based on a universal taxation.
Right.
Okay. In Switzerland, in Finland, you all pay a lot.
Right. Everybody's at 70%.
It's not the 1%. It's everybody.
Right.
And they're paying like 25% to 35% of their income.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're the 1%, that doesn't hurt you as much. But when you're making $30,000 and 10 grand is going to pay taxes.
Right.
That's a hell of a hit. And when young people in particular are educated to what that means when you have this utopian society, like, wow, that kind of sucks.
Right. Yeah.
But you got to get there first.
Right.
And, you know, it's like buyer's remorse. I do believe that over the course of this next cycle, I believe Mem Dani wins. I believe he will be forced to put the brakes on. By Schumer, by Jeffries, by Hochul, at least until the midterms.
Right.
Then it's game on.
Right.
And in the meantime, the DSA are going to do as much as they can to influence the primary vote in the midterm cycle on the state level to get the alignment they need to get the $10 billion from the state coffers, regardless of who the governor is.
Mm.
And then we're on the sleigh ride, man. Okay.
Right.
Now he's got all this money. It's coming out of everybody else's pocket. What are you going to do with it to make New York this wonderful place where we have 50% less police officers? We've got open air drug markets and food is for free. And now you watch the John Castamatidis and the Hannafords and the Tops markets simply disappear.
Yep.
So now you're really reliant on the city grocery, et cetera.
Right.
No, it's going to be a complete shit show. But we got to get there first.
You got to run again is what you got to do.
I don't know. I mean, hey, listen.
I don't mean right now.
I am the canary in the coal mine. I think it's unfortunate that...
yeah, but we need... Here's why we need your voice.
But more people need to step up.
Yeah, but you have had... You've spent a lot of time thinking about this stuff. I don't need anybody else to step up. I need a guy like you who has thought about it. And
in a normal world, if the Hudson Valley were more typical of other areas of this state, that is the direct progression.
Right.
You're from a community. You work within that community. You raise your family in that community. You go to give back to that community. And most of the time, you're given the opportunity. And if they don't like you, they kick you out in 2 years.
Right.
In this area, they spit in your eye and say somebody who showed up yesterday is the person who's going to run. I mean, Mem Daddy's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Similar to Sarah Hanna-Shrestha. They both are foreign born. They both received their citizenship in like 2018.
Mm.
They both ran in 2019 and were elected to the New York State Assembly. This is a formula, and it was right in the DSA documents. And there is this movement towards, you know, we don't want any more white, you know,
right,
males, toxic masculinity.
Right.
We want somebody who's, you know, other. And that is how you've seen this whole thing roll out. I mean,
which there does need to be other, but it needs to be other that has lived it and thought about it and put the time in.
Well, it'd be nice if there was some competency.
Yeah, you know, competency would be nice.
There's a lack of that throughout.
Yeah.
And yet here we are. Right. And so, I mean, again, Kathy Hochul wouldn't have gotten elected dog catcher. She was the accidental governor, similar to Patterson. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like one day Elliot decided he was going to fall on his sword and holy Christ, I guess I'm the governor. You know, and the first thing I want to tell you is, I've been running around on my wife forever. Okay, like the Patterson thing.
Right.
Elliot Spitzer gave up the governorship because of infidelity.
Right.
And then Patterson gets up there with his wife at his side and says, we've been running around on each other for years.
Now, well, at least you're saying it.
Now, he had the good sense to do it once and be done.
Right.
Okay, Kathy Hochul, you know, barely won election when she ran on her own terms against Eldon.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a presidential year, so there was a lot more in play.
Right.
This time around, it's not a presidential; it's a midterm.
Right.
And she isn't any more popular than she was 4.5 years ago.
I'm working on getting her on.
On the radio?
On here, yeah.
On this podcast, yeah. You know, that would be interesting. I would be curious to see if you just spoke
We're getting it.
Well,
we're working on it.
You just spoke about truthfulness. I hope you're not looking for a lot of truthfulness when she comes to your TV or your show. I mean,
we'll have a fact checker.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall when she shows
Fair
up.
Fair enough, man.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Thank you for doing this, man. And
no, it's all good. I may start my own podcast at some point.
Feel free to use the studio.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, seriously, come on in.
I am tired of being fed, you know, information that I know to be false.
Right.
And I think a lot of people are. I think a lot of people have kind of had their belly full.
Yeah.
And no, this thing with this young man, Kirk, it really has resounded. And I think nationally and almost internationally, it should resound.
Yeah. You know? Maybe we have finally gone too far.
When good people are executed for basically speaking truth.
Right.
You know, whatever your version of truth is, and you're not offending anybody by doing so, you're simply using
words. Even if you are offending.
But you're using words. You're not using weapons.
Right.
If your voice is your weapon, how do you hurt anybody?
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, again, the pen is mightier than the sword.
Yep.
But we have, and that, I believe, will be the epitaph of his death. The pen and the spoken word are mightier than the sword and the bullet that came out of that rifle.
Yeah. Hope you're right, man.
And that's a great way to close.
All right. Thank you so much for doing this, man.
Good to see you.
Always awesome.
Good time.
Oh, that was great. Thank you so much.
No problem. We covered a lot of ground.